which we've called The Counting House. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show again the lovely Jane Ollis, Managing Director of Rift Accounting. But first I'm going to get Jane to explain what The Counting House is all about, and then we're going to talk about today's episode after that, if that's okay. So, Jane, over to you. What's The Counting House all about? First of all, explain what a counting house is.
A counting house was actually first established as the place where money was counted.
Blimey.
And then moved on from that, from the place where accounts were compiled.
Right.
And if you go back to Tudor times, they'd actually have a special table laid with a green cloth on it, on which the clerk would come and enter figures into the ledger. So it has great historical context.
I also, I don't know if this is a myth or not, but I also heard a story once that said that quite often back in Elizabethan era, that they actually used a checkerboard to count money in the same way that you use an abacus. And that's where we get our current term, exchequer.
Well, there we go. That's a fantastic fact. Thank you, Mr. Paul Andrews.
Brilliant. Cool. So the counting house is a place where money got counted, and then eventually it became a place of bookkeeping. What? What?
You guys should get a room.
Why? Just because I know stuff about accountants. So, basically, what are we going to be covering in the counting house? What's the counting house going to be about each time that we're on?
Each time that we're on, the counting house will include interviews with great entrepreneurs. So, people who count in business.
Because so, not Martin, then.
No troublemakers. No
No riffraff and troublemakers. You don't want any of that. People like Jackie and Jay, but not Martin, right?
Because people run business, but are they entrepreneurs?
Right.
And the work that we've done at Rift Accounting in the last 15 months since we've been up and running has showed a lot of people start a business because they're great at what they do, they want to earn some money, they want to be their own boss. Only a few of them, I think, are what you would really call an entrepreneur. So this feature, every month on the Business Bunker, will be about exploring the stories of entrepreneurs. What are the magic ingredients that they have? What can we learn from that? Because great entrepreneurs build great businesses.
I want to just inject something here because it drove me nuts. And I fell for it. I fell for it big time last night. There was a post on Facebook last night, and it was from an American website, and it just said, entrepreneurs are just rich kids with nothing better to do. Okay. And when I first saw that, I just thought, it's clickbait, you know, I'm just not even... You wouldn't believe the amount of people underneath that post that were talking the most absolute dribble I've ever heard in my life. There's no better way of putting it. And I don't want to get political or anything, but there's some people in this country that just really don't know which end is up. And the most amazing nonsense was being spouted under there. So eventually I had to wade into that little argument, which I don't normally like to do, but I felt I had to. Anyway, I just thought I'd tell you that because it's apposite to what you were saying, that sometimes... And somebody actually posted this, and it said, do you actually have a different definition of an entrepreneur to the rest of us, to the person that posted it? Which is very true, isn't it? We don't always work that out. I mean, I know someone very close to me, I'm not going any further than that, who's a very successful business lady, and she always objected to being called an entrepreneur. She is not an entrepreneur. She doesn't take risks. She isn't expanding her business into other areas. She does what she does, which is a professional service that she's an expert in. And therefore, she said, I'm not an entrepreneur. I don't want to be an entrepreneur. I'm not a risk taker. I'm a business person.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Is that a label that business people aspire to, or is it a label we like to give people like Richard Branson in order that we can separate them and put them on a pedestal separate from everybody else? I don't know.
I think there is a big difference between the two, between an entrepreneur and someone who just wants to run a business. Mm. And there can be both, but there is a big difference. And I've been looking at what I think are five magic ingredients.
Okay,
I'm
looking forward to this, but just to carry on this theme, I don't think one's any better or different to the other, but there are definitely entrepreneurs and there are definitely business people. And someone like Branson is an entrepreneur. He'll start a business in any old field, you know, trains, planes, books, Coca-Cola, anything that looks interesting. Business people won't do that. They stick to what they know. They will innovate within their business. Well, quite rightly, you know, they may do something different. You know, if you specialize in bookkeeping, you may move it to the cloud or, you know, do some innovative things with it, but you stick within the parameters of the business that you're in. And I think that's the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. But Jane, so five things that you want to tell us about that.
Five secrets I want to share.
But luckily no one's listening. So you can tell us and no one will ever know. We'll keep it a secret. Go for it.
Right. I think the first thing that defines an entrepreneur is their ability to look at themselves and their own areas of their lives where they're unhappy, they're worried, they're anxiety, they have anxiety about something. Because every great business starts from fixing someone else's problems. So being able to reflect on yourself and your own areas of unhappiness. So it could be, I love going to Starbucks in the morning, I love buying a coffee, and that's all great, but actually I'm so frustrated because I have to stand in a queue, I've only got 2 minutes till my train goes, and actually what I really would love is to be able to arrive here and my coffee's here. And now you can go to Starbucks, you're on the way, you can sit in your taxi or however you're getting to Starbucks, you can order it on your app, and your coffee's waiting for you when you arrive.
Right.
So entrepreneurs, think about all those areas of where you're feeling anxiety and pain.
Okay.
And they think about, oh, well, what if? What if? So for me, that ability to reflect on their own life and other people's sets them apart.
It's a really good point, that, isn't it?
Because it is, absolutely.
The most successful brands, whether it be Apple today or, you know, Unilever, whoever it was, whoever it will be, ultimately become successful by solving people's problems.
Absolutely, they do. But Jane, having identified it, I can see that quite clearly, that it is frustration that makes you an entrepreneur. And it goes, why do you do that? Why do you do it like that? Why can't I do it something differently? And the difference is, I guess, that a lot of people can feel frustrated by something, and a few people will actually do something about it.
They can tap into that. And then what they're great at is generating ideas. What if? And in fact, the more audacious the idea that they come up with, the more likely the chance that business is to be an outrageous success if they can pull it off. So they're just really good then at thinking creatively and laterally about, oh, I wonder if we could do X, Y, and Z, and have that ability to think through different solutions to that person's problems.
I love disruptive businesses. I love disintermediation and all those things that you can do to disrupt something that works already, or maybe doesn't work already, if you see what I mean. And I think that is a great source of new ideas and new creativity and new businesses, especially now, where you can actually affect a business in a way that you couldn't do 50 years ago due to the onset of technology, which means that most of us can bat well above our weight now as opposed to how we used to be able to do it. Cool.
And true innovation is actually hard to come by in the marketplace. I was watching the TV the other night, and, you know, WeBuyAnyCar.com has been around for a while now.
Yeah.
But there's another entrant into that marketplace, and they don't say we buy any car. I think it's something like we quote any car.
Yeah.
You know, so they're a competitor that's clearly just trying to copy someone else's business model. And you think, well, look, you weren't the first guys. You know, you haven't actually brought anything new to the table.
Many years ago, when I had a proper job, before I worked for anyone else, I was working for Citibank, the American bank. And one of my last jobs at Citibank, because I was there a long time, was head of futurology, and I was looking at future systems and stuff like that. And we did quite a lot of research on new ideas. And quite often, though, the second player in the market jumping on the bandwagon actually succeeds better than the first player in the market. And we were having a conversation about exactly this earlier on about Friends Reunited. Friends Reunited were the world's first social media platform. Yeah, they were before Facebook, they were before Twitter, they were a British company. And yesterday they went bust and shut down. But they were first in the market, and they didn't develop it in the right way. Other social media platforms came along, and there were some others. I can't remember who it was. There was another one before Facebook, begins with an M, MySpace. MySpace came along, and a few others like that. So sometimes that the second tier onto the bandwagon actually succeed, which is why a lot of people do it. So they're not, we term that the bleeding edge. So basically, if you're first into a market, you can get yourself severely cut up, and then somebody else comes along and picks up the pieces.
Sure.
Jane, so what else are we looking at with entrepreneurs?
Well, once they've got their ideas honed down, they are then really good at pitching it. They are natural communicators, and that's not just because they've got the gift of the gab, it's because they are good at getting their facts together. They will pull a really compelling story together. So when they go out maybe pitching to investors or whoever it is, they're naturally contagious.
Mm.
They attract people, and I think that's really key. And not only do they attract people, they recognise that they can't do it all on themselves. And what you'll find with great entrepreneurs is they nearly have like a tribe around them.
Mm.
They bring people to the table who've got the skills that they need. So they're not generally sort of lone players. They're not sat on their own somewhere. They're natural collaborators. And they get this buy-in to their vision and what they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, Branson is another classic example of that, isn't it? And he will quite openly tell you, I know nothing about aeroplanes or Coca-Cola or Cola, but, you know, it looked like a good business model and we could brand it Virgin, so I put a team on doing it, basically.
Right, yeah. I think the point is they understand their business and they understand that their business idea is based on genuine, real consumer insight in terms of, you know, what is the solution that we can offer, you know, that is innovative, that isn't necessarily out there currently.
Yeah.
So they're passionate about it because they've done that field work, if you like, in terms of understanding where the need is and therefore what the solution needs to look like. And, you know, how many networking events do you go to where somebody stands up to talk about their business?
Right.
And it's the flattest 60-second pitch you've ever heard in your life. And you think, well, you know, if you're not convinced, you certainly can't convince me.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, okay, so let's crack on with this.
Yeah, well, I've actually, you know, as we've talked, gone through four of my five.
Right.
And the final one is about resilience and being able to quickly move when you've got to adapt and change and just having that endless enthusiasm to carry on in spite of, no doubt, massive roadblocks. And I think that ability to always pick yourself up when things go wrong, because things always go wrong in business. Things always go wrong when you've got great ideas, even, you know, they're ultimately successful. You can guarantee in business is never a smooth ride.
Absolutely.
And entrepreneurs pick themselves up. Businesses, their business may fail, and unfortunately in the UK we have a culture where that's seen as really bad. In the US it's seen as part of the journey, the learning journey of great entrepreneurship. But that ability to just keep going and always moving forward, even if you're just crawling, it's always about that forward direction.
I don't know if you recall, most of you are too young, there was a chap called Tom Peters, and Tom was a senior consultant with McKinsey's. And Tom wrote the very first ever management book that went to number one on the bestseller list back in 1982. He wrote a book called In Search of Excellence, and it became a cult book in which he identified excellent businesses and excellent companies. And he became very big on the speaking circuit. And many years ago, I also worked on the speaking circuit, and I had the pleasure of speaking on the same platform as Tom. And he was talking to a room full of corporate executives, And somebody in the audience said something about failure, and he rounded on the audience en masse, and he went, if you haven't been fired or you haven't failed by the time you're 35, you just ain't trying hard enough. Mm-hmm. He said, push the envelope, get yourself fired. And, of course, there was laughter, and everybody nodded and all the rest of it. And, of course, everybody went back and went, no, I'm not doing that. But you're right. In the US especially, failure is a badge of honour. It means you've been there, seen it, done it, got the T-shirt and arrived out the other side. In the UK, we tend to frown on failure, and it becomes something that of a stigma that we stick with. But failure is really important. Most of you know that I own loads of businesses, but I've had more businesses fail than I currently own. We just don't talk about them a lot. And that's the thing, really, is that you can't be right all the time. You just can't. You can't get it right. And there's all kinds of things. It's not necessarily your fault that something failed either. You know, just the timing was wrong, or the circumstances were wrong, or you didn't have the resources to hand, or you got, you know, we were talking with Jay earlier, you didn't make the right decisions up front and get, you know, the right infrastructure in place, and, you know, you fell out with your partner or whatever, that can lead to failure.
Well, I think one of the most important things any aspiring entrepreneur can do is study failures, because if you can learn from them. In fact, Mr. Paul Andrews, I think we need a whole session looking at all of your business failures and why they failed.
We need a few sessions, to be honest.
Well, that's, I mean, going back to what you said earlier, though, Paul, you know, that's why the second entrant into a marketplace is often commercially more successful, because what they've got is the business to go with the idea, not the idea with no business to back it up.
Yeah. So, and I can see where you where the gaps were and where you failed. No, absolutely.
But resilience, you know, really interesting point, because you know, it's a lonely business. Running a business, any kind of business, is actually a very lonely business.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you've got to be able to deal with that.
One of the things, I don't want to get political about this. I just want to make the statement about this. One of the things that is beginning to worry me, we are starting to develop in this country a kind of anti-business kind of approach to things. You see so many things in the media nowadays that kind of having a dig all the time based on a very limited set of knowledge. You know, it's easy to point at companies that don't pay their corporation tax. But the trouble is that the language that's used around that isn't identifying half a dozen businesses that accounts for. There's 5.2 million businesses, you know, and 5.1 and three quarter million of them have no problem at all. But that's starting to grate on me a little bit, but that's something for another time. Coming back to Jane and this entrepreneurial stuff, I want to kind of turn that on its head a little bit, because Jane is Managing Director of Rift Accounting. You're an accounting company, yeah? It's a professional service, like the law. But one of the beauties of Rift is you're very new, relative to all the other 100-year-old accounting firms. And you guys have come into this with a completely innovative way of doing things, have you not?
Yep. It's all about turning a whole proposition of accounting being something that's done at the year end to something that's completely proactive instead of reactive. And that, just flipping that on its head, changes the service that you offer.
Absolutely. And you guys are very innovative in what you do. It's all about building a relationship on an ongoing basis with your customers, as you said. And you're kind of making waves in the establishment of accounting and stuff like that for all kinds of good reasons. But again, it's entrepreneurial, isn't it, within what you're doing and trying to do.
I'm going to have a go at an analogy here.
Go for it.
Because a lot of people hate numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, numbers are, you know, their worst nightmare. Mm. Spreadsheets, numbers, P&L, balance sheet, whatever it might be. Give it all to the accountant. Mm. But actually, if you can flip that on that head, and the analogy I'll use is golf, because you had Neville on last week.
Yeah.
You had Shirley talking about, or was it the week before, golf.
Yeah.
And it's the same with golf and putting. You know, putting is probably one of the most important skills that you need in the game of golf. Mm. And if you can actually turn that negative, because most people don't putt well.
Yeah.
But if you can turn that negative in a positive, you're going to be so much better at putting and playing golf generally. Mm. And I guess it's the same in business.
Well, one of the things that I've always said, once you've got your business up and running and you've got your articles of association and you've got your shareholders agreement and you've got your legal infrastructure in place, the next thing you need to do is to get your accounting in place. And again, it's another thing that people skimp on. Now, I'm here to tell you, I'm the worst person in the world at numbers. Yeah. I left school when I was 14. The last thing I did at school was a mock CSE exam in which I scored a massive 6%. Okay. I've no idea if that's good or not, because my maths is so bad, I just don't know. But I thought that made me in the top, like, 10%. Is that not how it works? Anyway, me and numbers don't get on, okay? But after a couple of years in business, I realised that there are some basic accounting things that, as a business person, you need to know. You need to be able to read a balance sheet. You need to know your P&L, and you need to know your outgoings, your costs, basically. And those things are the only crucial thing about a business. All the other stuff your accountants can do. They can do all the tax returns and the filings and put it here and you can't claim for that and all that kind of nonsense that you need somebody to sort out for you. But you must understand the basics of the numbers. Otherwise, you just can't run a successful business. I don't know what your feelings on that are, Jay.
Agree. At the end of the day, there's one successful number for me, and it's profit.
Yeah.
And from that, though, you need to see what leads you to that and what will help you on that journey.
Mm.
And if you're starting up a business, it's often when is you get your break-even point.
Yeah.
So when we have someone new comes to us with an idea, and they might already have set up their limited company, first thing I want to do, though, is road test their idea for them.
Mm.
and just do that sense check, actually.
Yeah.
You know, you think it's a good idea. Have you been out there? Have you tested it? Have you got, you know, had it critically pulled apart by 50 of your best friends? Have you got a, you know, really rigorous checking it before and then turning that into some numbers that say, well, actually, well, how long is it going to take you before you break even? And then,
I actually like that. And there's some interesting stuff in there as well, because quite often people's research really just boils down to, well, I asked my mum and she liked it. And, you know, you go, yeah, well, she would, you know.
How many businesses out there can actually put their hand up and say, I've got a business plan, I've got a current business plan for my business? Mm. And, I mean, I used to do a lot of work as a consultant for the Startup Loan Company, which is government money that they want to lend to new startup businesses. Yep. The only proviso was, you need to have a business plan. Mm. And the business plan wasn't for our benefit to lend them money. Mm. The business plan was for the benefit of the business owner, so that they knew what they were actually getting into and that they actually had a viable business on the back of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jane, 5 tips for entrepreneurs. Really brilliant. It's something that we're trying to encourage more and more, entrepreneurs to start businesses and get involved. It's a feature that we're going to regularly feature on the Business Bunker show, The Counting House, and we're going to talk about some other business-related and entrepreneur-related things over the coming weeks and months. For the moment, thank you for bringing us those 5 tips. Are you going to have a blog about that?
It's written, and it's there, and it's ready for you to post.
Fabulous. So we will put a blog up about that, and I guess it will be on the Rift site. It'll also be on the Business Bunker site. And just so that you know, to make it easier, we've given Rift a page of their own, and we're going to put up all the stuff that we're going to hear from the Counting House on that page. We've also got some other stuff at the moment, which I put on there just so that there was something on the page, really. We've got a blog from the lovely Annette on starting a business, which is a really interesting blog. And I also put the stuff from Forging the Future, which was an event that Jane and I hosted back in last spring, which was interesting. And then there's a video from an event that Jane and I did called an Unconference, which we did in Canterbury, and the video is up on that page at the moment. But we'll add this blog to that page.
Thank you.
And then you can go into the Kent Business Radio website /Rift and find their page with all this kind of lovely stuff on it. And do go to the riftaccounting.co.uk website as well, because they've got tons and tons and tons of really good stuff in their blog pages, and they've got loads of free downloadable resources for people that are starting businesses about all the kind of things that you need and want and have to have when you start a business. Fabulous resources, all free to download, so do check that out. Jane, for the moment, thank you once again for joining us and starting a fascinating debate, which I'm afraid I kind of got too much into as well, in terms of telling you my thoughts and feelings on it, but it's something I'm passionate about, entrepreneurship. 5 tips for entrepreneurship. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Jane in the Counting House. Absolutely brilliant.